Stripe of fence of no rules. No rules whatsoever.
It's a rule-free Friday on the Emmy Berkley Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? You made it through another crazy week. We'll talk. Al Roker has done Rokerthon, 34 straight hours, breaking the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest weather report, is over. Well, that's over, right? Nancy Pelosi is mad as heck. We'll talk about that. Get you into the free-flow pop culture convo. Inspiration to action, shout-out, some musical birthdays to celebrate, too. And you on the line, if you're listening live on Friday, November 14th, 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east, number in motion, 347-857-4505. Twitter feed available, too, at AB Writes. The show today brought to you in part by Verizon Fios. It's rated number one for upload speeds. By Kellogg's Frosted Mini Wheats. It's a win-win for your breakfast, nutritious and delicious. And by the Oak Center for Lifelong Learning. It's never too late to embrace your dreams and live the life you've always wanted. Details at oakcenterlearning.org. Speaking of living a creative life and one that has taken all kinds of interesting twists and turns, delighted to welcome our guest to the show, multi-talented artist Ro Johnson-Evans joins us. She is an award-winning singer-songwriter who has turned her attention to prose. She's written a captivating book of essays and stories called Flights of Fancy, and she's also a fiber artist. So it's a pleasure to welcome you to the show, Ro. I know we've wanted to get you on for a while. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much. I love the idea of it's never too late to explore your potential and your interests.
I heard you say earlier. Yes, oh, I absolutely believe that. So it's kind of one of the fulcrums of our show and my work with people as a creativity coach, counselor, and writing teacher. I often explore with people, very often in midlife, they feel like they've lost their chances, and sometimes they can really reignite that spark if they're willing to work at it and embrace what they've always wanted to do, or just decided what they wanted to do or figured it out. Sometimes it takes a while, as we know, to get there.
Yeah. Or give themselves permission to do it.
Yes. Exactly. That's so true. Give yourself permission. Let go of all this constraints and rules that we think we should do, what we should do, what path we should follow. Sometimes people have that built into them either from their parents or school or just society or just something they found along the way that thought they were supposed to do something, and it turns out that's not really what they've always wanted to do in their passion. So it comes when it comes, as I like to say, and you can't berate yourself for what happened in the past. You have to just start from where you're at now and go forward.
Exactly.
But you've been embracing your creative muse for many years throughout your life. Is it fair to say that singing and songwriting was your first love, or no?
Yes, it is, actually. I did go to school for zoology because my father said, oh, please, get a degree in something practical. So I love nature. I love being outdoors. So zoology was really intriguing to me. But I played every night throughout college in the clubs in Austin.
Well, there you go. So you were trying to hedge your bet, so to speak. You were having the backup plan, which so many people do. And it's not that it's a smart thing to probably do, actually for life.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. But your tug towards music and writing songs and performing really was so strong that you carved that a niche for yourself and did that for quite a long time
It's fun because when I started, most of the people who were performing were not writing their own material. And so that for me, that was the way I could be special and also a great way to explore what I felt and interpret it in different chord colors and different, minor keys and positive key. I mean, just, all the different sounds that you can do. The challenge with writing prose now is that you don't have all those things. You don't get a chance to really hit the volume on something that you would if you were singing. You would punch a line, but it's all on a page, and I love the challenge.
Yeah. It's definitely a different art form. But it's all storytelling. You love the story. You can tell that by both your songs, and we're very grateful that you sent us a CD, so we're going to play a couple of your songs as well. And folks can certainly buy your book to read your stories. But you really love the storytelling and the characters. The characters are really for you, and for me too. That's one of the things that I love the most about writing and reading, is to get into the character. So where do these people come to you from? Are they people that you actually know, or are they people that just get into your mind, get into your system, and they have to come out?
I don't know. They must be swimming around in my mind. Some of them, I mean, like Miss Henrietta, is somebody I would like to believe in, would like to have known. And so she has to exist out there somewhere. And so I just sort of built her, and then she started talking to me, which is really fun.
Yeah, that's always the best for me, too, when the characters sort of take over. Then you know you're onto something. Tell people a little bit about Henrietta for those people who are not familiar.
Well, she lives in the woods, but it's not sort of a woods hippie kind of thing. She's in a different space altogether. She is very tuned into everything in nature and has a very direct way of telling a young friend things that usually adults don't talk to 11-year-olds about. And so that's sort of how that one whole started. And she has a different interpretation of the same experience that we all have. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I just want people to get a thumbnail of what we're talking about. You know, you're talking shorthand and
yeah.
They're not familiar with the characters or the
yeah.
stories. Now, what were your earliest influences? Was your family musical to begin with?
Yes. Yeah.
They were.
My father was a jazz pianist and composer, and my mother was a flautist, but they really didn't stay together very long. He continued with music throughout his life, and she pursued art and music and finance and all sorts of things. But I have the wonderful memory of being 4 years old in Woodstock, New York, with two grand pianos in the back of the old Maverick house and hearing Dad working on stuff. Because my father was totally blind, I just assumed that he sat there and it just happened. Because he wasn't reading music or anything like
yeah.
that. And so when I started in writing, I just sat and made up what I thought I wanted to hear. So kind of a different
You were approach. Definitely connected to the source of something, right? I mean, something out there
yeah.
That was coming
yeah.
through
yeah.
you, and I really do believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when we mm-hmm. talk about that, and I've said this before, people always have this sort of, like it's an airy-fairy thing, oh, you're just lucky, it just comes to you. There's still a lot of work involved, but you have to be tuned
oh, yeah.
in to get it first, and
but,
then you have to work with it.
Well, there's something inside you that wants to express whatever that is, and that probably is the one thing in common with songwriting, performing, and writing short stories, that desire to try to communicate something that just isn't words and it just isn't feeling. It's more, you know, it's visceral.
Yeah, and you want to get it out, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get it out. And you had that interesting, eclectic kind of background that fueled you and prepared you for your own journey, because you say your mom was involved in a couple of different things as you have become involved,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. taking it from the singing, songwriting into writing fiction and mm-hmm. essays, and then also you do fiber arts. So you had a need or a hankering to explore different avenues, which I think is fabulous, and,
yeah.
and you do them all quite well, which is not always the case either.
Well,
a good for you.
You never really know what your journey is going to be. And so for a number of years, probably 12 years, my husband and I have been taking care of our parents. So suddenly if I booked a festival in, you know, Kansas or somewhere, if someone was in the hospital, I had to be a no-show. And that only happened once. And it was like, nope, I'm not doing this again. So I came back and decided to focus more here at home. And it had occurred to me that it would be so nice to be able to do something. And if people looked at it and liked it, they'd get it. And if they didn't, they wouldn't. Well, you didn't have to explain what you were thinking or why you wrote that lyric or why you used that word. And also, the work would be separate from you. When you sing or give a talk at a book, you know, review or anything like that, people are looking at you, and part of what they're reacting to is how you look, how you wrinkle your nose up, you know, whether your shoulders are hunched or whether they're down. They're their visual is another big part of their experience. But I thought it would be so neat to do something that people could just feel and look at. And if they, you know, can, if it spoke to them in some way, that would be exciting. So that's why the fiber world is just, you know, and it's limitless, you know.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different thing, too, right? I mean, you're still expressing yourself, and there's still creativity, but you are, as you said, you're like producing a product. It's a different kind of thing. It's in the work. It's not with words. So yeah, there's a different sort of.
Yeah, it's a different. I'm connected to it, but I'm not. The crazy thing for me is I discovered I loved to spin, and so I started spinning fiber, and then I discovered it was. I really loved knitting, you know, which I had lost since I was a kid, and started doing that. Then I got into weaving. And for me now to take a fiber and go from fiber to yarn to a woven piece is just very satisfying every step of the way. So it's not like I hate spinning and I love weaving. I mean, I really enjoy the whole process. It's very... I don't know, meditative maybe. You know, you just, there's a rhythm to it. It's calming.
So do you find that helps you in your other activities like writing? Does it give you escape from that, or does it help enhance it? How do they go side by side?
Well, they go side by side generally about 4 feet away. So I'll have the table and the computer and then the weaving or the spinning and kind of wander back and forth between them.
No, but I meant more metaphorically. I mean, does it help you? Do you feel more relaxed in your writing after you've gone through the process of the fiber arts? As you said, it's sort of meditative. Does that help you? I mean, do you have stories running in your head while you're doing that, or is it something which you totally just don't have anything going on?
Sometimes, and it varies. That's the crazy thing about writing is you'll hear people talk about having writer's block or this or that. You're really, in my opinion, you're constantly processing your life, your experience, trying not to spend too much time figuring out what you thought happened 30 years ago. But as you're living it, you're building the depth and the substance of what you will be able to write. So it's all connected for me.
I think you're right. And I think I know this as a writer myself, you're always sort of working because it's something, as you said, is always going on. And while you're in the middle of a project, things are percolating and coming closer to the fore and rewriting and reworking in your head. I think it just sort of happens once you're tuned into it. I think when you talk about the writer's block or when you're not really in the midst of a project, things are a little more... I don't say chaotic, but there are other things going on, and you might have several projects roaming around at one time, you know, before something takes shape.
And a part of you is continuing on the logical steps. Even though you're in front of, it's like standing and talking to someone when a train goes by. If the train goes by, it's going to be louder than anything you could say, and that will have your attention until it's passed. But the conversation you can get back to, but it's. I think things go on simultaneously. I think you're constantly sort of working at stuff, even though it may not be in the front of your attention.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good analogy. Very true. Who were some of your influences artistically as a writer and as a singer-songwriter? Who were you influenced by when you were first starting out and maybe now, too?
Why is it that this is a question that's predictable, and I never am quite prepared for it.
you know it's coming, but you don't have
to. I didn't get to that. I started with a fascination for guitar and banjo, and when I was in high school, I ran across the modal tunings, the mountain minors of some of the Appalachian tunes, and that really appealed to me. And so when I started to write, I normally wrote within the tone spectrum that I enjoyed, like a palette of colors, you know. And so I didn't have anybody when I first started out That was 62, 61, 62. And then the great folk scare kind of happened. And I admired...
Folk scare, I like that, yeah.
Well, I admired a lot of people. Eventually, when Joni Mitchell came to her popularity, people said, oh, she's doing what you're doing. And I'm going, we're just all listening to the same stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And I loved her combination of visual and sound by her putting together imagery that she would use in painting. I thought that was good. Another one, Guy Clark. He's a wonderful artist, visual artist with paints and sketching, but he was able to translate that into lyrics and stories. That's just terrific. So, gosh, who else? Eartha Kitt. Who else? A lot of the... I knew Janis Joplin and some of those folks back then, and we all sort of fed off of things that we enjoyed about each other and things that we didn't, you know, choose that the other person did. She had the ability to be absolutely raw, gutsy with her vocals and just, you know, just no restrictions at all. And then 2 seconds later, she could come down to the sweetest little line that was delicate and very vulnerable. And I really admired that freedom and her ability to do that. Oh, gosh, there's so many. For a while, I did a magazine that talked about singer-songwriters. And I think we were talking about maybe 400, 500 songwriters per issue. It was a quarterly. And part of that was listening to other people's stuff, you know.
That's a fun perk of the job. Yeah. But I like this radio show so much. I get to talk to other artists and writers, and you learn and get influenced and inspired by people. But, yeah, wow, that's a pretty pretty impressive thing. A lot of people doing a lot of work today. The interesting thing about your longevity in the music business and writing, et cetera, you've seen a lot of changes. I mean, things, some for the better, some for the worse, I suppose. I mean, now people have access with the internet and digital equipment and technology to get their work out there much more easily. That also kind of ratchets up the competition. You don't have as many record companies and a lot of people doing things independently, and that's a good thing. Could be a tough thing, though, to stand out and make a living at it. I mean, what are some of the changes that you endured, and what's your feeling about how things have evolved?
Well, I started out, you know, in Texas with a sort of the renegade writer, and then went to London and worked with EMI. And so I had a major deal there. I was in a duo. And the business end really bothered me because you were supposed to look like stars and act like stars. And I just didn't feel like I should, you know, put on airs. And so when I came back, I said, well, I'm going to keep my living requirements low so that I can actually make a living, not go in debt, and make the kind of music I want to make. And although I did, when we recorded in London, we did original tunes. They were sort of, very long story anyway. You know, like the facing a corporate world and a bottom line world. But
right. So they put more restraints on what you could put out, and as you said, they were more concerned about your image and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, and they didn't pay the landlord, and, you know, they said, oh, it'll take them 2 years to sue us. You know, so it's kind of like, wait a minute, I'm living in that place, and you're not paying the rent. They, you know, more ethical business ethics, I guess. But the fun thing is that in 70, blah, 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 when we were there, 68, and at that time, what the music that I was creating was looked at as folk rock. And then a few years later, it was considered a kind of country, and I had a couple of cuts by a country artist. And then a few years later, one of those songs was in bluegrass. And then someone said, well, really, you're more pop. And so people interpret I don't think the music changed. I think it was just where people could find to fit it. If they liked it, they could fit it in. Yeah, and I'm kind of wondering about writing the same way. It's sort of if it touches people and it works for the listener or the reader, they're going to call it whatever they like.
Well, you know, what's interesting, I don't think listeners or readers, I don't think people care so much for the labels. I think the labels are for people who are categorizing it, whether it's the record company or the publishers or the bookseller, whoever's putting it in a category. We have to put it somewhere. I think readers and listeners, audiences will find what they like. So whatever you call it, I know there's always this debate, like with country music, you mentioned before, has changed over the years, and it's a bigger umbrella now, and some people are offended by that. I just saw Naomi Judd talking about how she likes a lot of stuff, but she doesn't consider it real true country, and I'm saying, well, what does it really matter what the label is, you know? But some people are very tied to that, and they think it's the heritage, I guess, or whatever they think is the real thing.
It was explained to me once by someone in Nashville who said it's like you have a suitcase and you need a handle on it so you can pick it up and move it and share it with other people. And if you don't have that handle, it's just going to sit in one place. So I guess that's kind of the branding argument all the way around. I like independent.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but I do understand where that person was coming from, because it is sort of true, because that way it will stand out. Again, that's the thing. I don't think people care so much, but they do have to find it. Once they find it, and once they like you, I don't think they care what the label is. But I think
that's why I really appreciate you talking to me today. There might be somebody out there.
Now, the honor is ours, of course. You know.
I'm going to read that.
Let's talk a little bit about your stories. Now, you decided when you, obviously you moved back home, you had obligations at home, so you said, I want to be able to do something. Was that what made you decide, I'm going to sit down and really try my hand at fiction and essays? You kind of have a blend in your book, Flights of Fancy. What was that the motivation, or you just said, hey, you know, I want to try a new form too? And obviously it works for you, but I'm just curious as to how you got into it and decided to stick with it.
The first time that I thought about it, I was co-writing with someone at a laundromat on the road, and we were sketching out sort of the plot of the song. And, you know, you've got three verses and you know, 3 minutes, and and I kept filling in all these details. And he looked at me and said, you really just need to write a book. This is not a song. And so it was like, well, yeah, you do have to filter out so much to get it into a small package that can still try to connect with people. And so suddenly a short story was huge, and you had all this room to play in. And I joined a local writers group, and we've been meeting over 10 years now, every 2 weeks, from different walks of life, different interests, and it's fabulous support. No one says that's wrong, but they'll say, I didn't quite understand this part, you know. And so you can go back and find out how other people approach or are looking at what you understand totally, or you wouldn't have written it out.
Right. And also you get feedback to see what people are thinking and what people, you know, how they're responding to it, and take what you want. Obviously, you have to go with your own instincts and what you feel in terms of criticism or advice, but it's sometimes helpful to see what other people are, if they're getting it, you know, what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
And also the other beauty of that, I'm guessing for you, as other workshops I've been involved with, is accountability. You know, you kind of have to stay on course and do something because you're going to show up in a couple of weeks. So good to have something.
Exactly.
You know, motivation to get something done. I've done workshops with people. I say, believe me, when you get involved in this, your procrastination problem will take care of that a little bit, you know, at least curb it somewhat.
Like,
because, you know, you want to show up.
Nothing,
you know,
without a deadline.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I always say. Yeah.
Deadlines really help. Well, in putting the book together, the tricky part for me was that and I don't know if you've had a chance to look at all of it, but the last story is a novella that is about as far away from the first two stories that it could possibly be. And I said, well, I think this is just a little too wild to put in, you know, in this book. And people are constantly referring to Madame Butterfly and to Miss Henrietta, and those seem to be the two characters that stood out the most. And the church ladies like Madame Butterfly, and I don't understand why.
Well, you know, the other beautiful thing about it, as you obviously know, is that you put your work out there and people take from it what they will, what they see.
Yeah.
They bring their own experiences to it, and it always amazes me, too, when people comment on something, and you're like, oh, really? Okay, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, just enjoy it.
It
takes on its own life once it's out there. You can't really control how people can react to it, good or bad, and, you know, you got to take both. So.
Yeah. Well, there's so many things that are demanding our attention right now. It's a real honor when someone sits down and reads it and thinks about it, because they've got, you know, the television on, they've got to take the kids somewhere, the husband's talking about this. I mean, I can't believe how busy our lives are. And it's a real honor to have people trust you enough to emotionally follow a story, because they may be interrupted four or five times, you know, or if they feel that if they don't trust you in the reading, they're going to hold back and say, I don't know where this is going. I don't know if I'm happy with following this. Does that make sense? It's kind of like songs that were, you know, that would say gotcha at the end. That always upset me. I never could get along with that.
Well, I say gotcha.
Some songs would sound absolutely beautiful, and I won't mention any artists, but you might be able to figure it out, and be beautiful, and you'd follow them, and it was wonderful and visual, and then suddenly there would be like blood on the wall or something, and
you'd feel violated
by having trusted and followed that far. So I think that if you're going to ask someone to follow you into some difficult places, then you have to give them something to laugh about, because that's going to, you know, make everything even out the energy again. So even in pretty serious short stories, my brain always has a joke or two in there. Because that's how we equalize some of those scary places, you know.
Yeah, that's a great point.
They're going to think it's all about Halloween.
No, I think but I think it's so true that balancing emotions, and of course everybody writes in different forms and different genres and whatever, and that's fine. But I think you're right, and I think that also makes it more real. I mean, it also comes from whatever your perspective is. I mean, I happen to use a lot of humor in my work too. It always comes out. You know, it just comes through.
Yeah.
And I write murder mysteries, so you got to have some humor in there, or else, you know, you're going to be thinking about the grim, you know, they're cozy murder mysteries, so that, you know, we all know there's a murder there, but we don't really see too much the gory details.
Yeah.
But part of the book is solving the murder, and the other part is just enjoying the characters and the other subplots and all that kind of stuff. But so humor bleeds through there as well. But you're right. I think also it's well, you say a rhythm and a balancing. If everything is one flat note, whatever it may be, then you don't have the highs and the lows, and you need to play with the emotions a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it's like doing a performance, a set at a concert or something, and it's all love songs in the same key.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to vary it.
After the second
you
know what you got ahead of you. So attention span. I confess I have a short attention span. So for me to be entertained and enjoy reading, something has to happen very interesting in the story. But the way words are used have to be intrigued me also. So I'm monkey mind is what I really have. I'm sort of here and there, and if it doesn't grab me, I'm going to do something else.
Well, But that's why, well, that's also very true. I think we've had, because of all these things that you were talking about before, the whole cultural cacophony of all this noise and all these things happening and happening at, you know, high speed on the Internet, people have, I think, like a cultural ADD now that we probably didn't have years ago. So you do have to grab people early and keep them. But that's where your songwriting experience comes in, because in a song, like you said, it's a shorter form, and you have to get it all in. And I admire songwriters so much, because I'll hear a song, and especially those songs that are so visual and have good character. I'm like, my God, they did that in a very short amount of time. I mean, even a, you know, a long song is still shorter compared to a story or a book. You know, how do they do that? And you don't want to grab people. But then, of course, you can't do it too short in a prose form. You have to try to, you know, you have to flesh it out more. So sometimes an ending, it's going to get away with a lot in a song. You can just sort of linger that, but you got to fill it out more in a story or a book. You know?
That part, so you get to do that part is tricky, because a couple of people said, oh, do a full book on one of the characters. And I said, well, I'd love to, but I haven't done that before. I'm still in a short story in my mind. And I don't, that's going to be one of the puzzles that I'm going to play around with. I don't know whether I'll, you know, do it to my satisfaction or not. But
well, as you said, though, you're not going to know until you try. And you're not going to know where it takes you until you embark on it, if you want to. And, you know, the short story is a great form, too. So, you know, if that's where you feel like you're more comfortable, then stay there. But if you feel like you want to take Henriette into a novel, there are people that might want to go along for that ride, I suspect.
I think some of them will, like maybe Miss Henrietta will be a collection of short stories instead of chapters, but that would all link together.
Well, it worked for Elizabeth Stout, who wrote Olive Kittredge. I don't know if you're familiar with that book. She got the Pulitzer Prize, and they just did a beautiful adaptation on HBO, which I thought was remarkable. So, yeah, think of it that way, and that might be less daunting, too, for you. I did my first full-length play. I said, I don't know if I can pull off a full one, but I had this one character, and I did, like, scenes that kind of connected together, and then before you know it, you had a full play, so...
Well, I didn't know if I was going to enjoy doing the book, which is funny. So people asked me why I made it with so much variety and variation in it. I said, well, that's the way my mind works, and who knows, I may never do this again. So just put all of it in there, rather than having a coherent theme that is repeated and, you know, all those things that... it makes it difficult to tell people what it is. It's because it's a smattering of a lot of different emotions and experiences through different characters. But I like it.
You like it? Well, maybe Lucinda Williams once wrote about you. She said, Crow leads you through a labyrinth of her own brand of Southern Gothic writing that's as real as the day is long. So to have such praise from another very talented artist.
It just blows my mind. Well, she is. Well, really, but you think about what she does. She is so thoughtful with her words. She is such a writer. But, I mean, it's just amazing. And she would probably be, whether she were writing prose or doing songs or whatever, you know. I've really enjoyed watching her and listening to her. And the other fun thing was that Anne Hood, I really admire her writing. And I was just shocked that she would get into it, you know, that someone that was not known is what I'm saying. You know that.
Yeah. Well, you got fans. You know. You don't know that you got fans. Well, you do. You do know that now. So people can find out more about everything. I think you have a website, right, with all your works. It's crowspun.com.
Yeah,
is that correct?
Yeah. No, it's crowspun.
SPUN.com.
Yeah. And I am guilty of not keeping it up. Facebook is so fast, and you know, I probably, if I spent the time on the website that I spent on Facebook, it would be a lot different. But it's a place, an anchor, and I finally wanted to combine everything, because people would say, oh, I remember you used to sing back in, you know, years ago, and, oh, are you the same person who used to do this over here? So it's all mishmashed into one website now, which is kind of fun.
And so you would rather people go to your Facebook page, or are you under this Crow Johnson?
Oh, yeah, it depends upon whether you want old news or new news. I mean, I'd love people to go to both, but
right.
Facebook is going to be more alive.
Well, your updates,
and
what you're up to.
Yeah, yeah. And it's all three names. It sounds like a law firm, Gray Johnson Evans, no hyphens, and it's sort of, you know, sounds kind of odd. But
that's a good thing because it makes you stand out. Like what we were saying about, you got to stand out. And I think people are like, oh, that's a cool name. Actually, when I saw it, I thought, that's a cool name.
Yeah.
What's the history of Crow? Is that
my grandfather's nickname? His last name was Crocheron, Crocheron, which is kind of an unusual last name, French, I think. And everybody called him Crow. And he was a very, very influential person for me when I was growing up. He was sort of the beacon. He was the one consistent, caring person that I attached to. And so I ended up stealing his name.
Can you reveal to us what your given name was? Or you don't want to do that?
My maiden name was Good Enough, just like the two words, good enough.
Wow. Cool.
And my first name was Amy. So,
how could you abandon that name? It's a great name.
Yeah, good enough for what? It was hard for a kid. But
no, I mean Amy.
Just, yeah.
I'm saying Amy's a great name.
It's been a wild journey. But yeah, I don't, I guess since I was maybe 12 or 13, I've thought of myself as Crow, and so we just legally changed it over. In kind of a mean way, I figured I moved around a lot. I lived with different people and was lucky enough to have really loving people look after me from the time I was about 2 months old. You know, it was a kind of a constant change. And my idea, which was not very kind, was, well, if you're not going to stay around and name the puppy, you know, and take care of the puppy, you don't get to name it.
So
I sort of stepped out on my own.
Interesting. Fascinating. We're going to leave, we're going to play a couple of your songs. The first one I think I want a little setup with for people to, it's called Charlene and the Social Worker. Tell me a little bit about that, because that's a real story in that song.
Oh,
how you came to it.
That was a dream. I had some friends who were dreaming and writing songs, and they're like Carolyn Hester dreamed about an Indian woman walking up a stairs into the heavens, and I talked to her a week later and said, and what do I get? I got a hooker in my dream, and she told me I needed to tell her story. So I kept saying, no, this is not the kind of stuff that I really want to write. But she became an imagined real human being. And I realized that, you know, so it is interesting to me because I did not have a plan for the whole song. But by the time I got to the end of the song, the refrain had flipped from the social worker. From the woman of the streets to the social worker, but they were both saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really a fascinating puzzle to be in.
Beautiful. So it's really beautiful how you get those stories right in a 4.5-minute song. It's great. It's really fabulous. Bro, it is such an honor to speak with you. What a delight. I hope folks find out more about all of your work, the music, the writing, the book we should mention again is called Flights of Fancy. Your CDs are still available, yes?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They are.
And
I wish you lived down the street. Thank you so much for spending the time talking. And we actually talked about things that matter to me a great deal. And that's
I'm so happy.
Exciting.
It's so exciting to hear that. Thank you so much. Again, it's Crow Johnson Evans. I know you don't do a lot on Twitter because I tweeted you, but you're not very active. But anyway, that's okay. You're on Facebook.
I haven't figured out Twitter yet.
That's okay. You're on Facebook. People can look you up there. And you're also at your website, crowsfund.com. Fascinating to talk to you. And what great work. Keep it up. And I hope you come back and see us again. I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Take care. It's Crow Johnson Evans, this one, a beauty called Charlene, and a social worker on the Amy Bender Harvey Show.
Charlene sells herself from the heat and grate on 38th. Pray we can get her into the van and back to the shelter before it's too late. There she is, let me out and circle the block real slow. If she's not too high this time, she just might go with us. Charlene, Charlene, do you remember me? I'm a friend. She says, girl, what you doing out here on the West End? I brought you some coffee from the shelter and a ham and cheese. Oh, how you doing, Char? Won't you talk to me, please? She says, I'm doing fine most of the time, 'cause Jesus loves me and keeps me safe from harm. Together we fly above 38. He's my lucky charm. And me and Jesus fly all over this town. And angels stay to watch me earn my keep out on the street. Hold my corner down. Charlene says, thanks for the coffee. You're not like the rest. Show up once a year, decked out in their Sunday best. With a little makeup, you know, girl, we can be a team. Oh, don't get all upset now, I'm just joking. Did you bring cream? I say, sure. Aren't you afraid you're gonna die or disappear? So many working women will never make it out of here. Tonight you could sleep so warm, safe and dry. Oh, come to the shelter, trust me, just give it a try. Her eyes get wild and she starts to scream. Trust me, girl, you'd bust me. Who are you with all your fancy talk? Afraid of her, make it to the van at the crosswalk. My timing was all wrong, it's such a thin line. I know you can't win them all, better luck next time. But I'll keep on trying to help Charlene, 'cause Jesus loves me and keeps me safe from harm. Together we fly above 38th. He's my lucky charm. Me and Jesus fly. Holding my corner down.
Isn't that great? Crow Johnson Evans, Charlene and the Social Worker. Less than 5 minutes. You got, oh, so many images and a great story right there. Find out more about Crow and her work at crowspun.com and what a treat it was to have her on the show. Here's another one. I like this one, too. The album, by the way, is called Hearsay. It's People Like Us, Crow Johnson Evans, on the Amy Beth Arkwright Show.
It's never a case of blind luck or circumstance. Drawn by the beat of each other's dance, caution to the wind, we give love a chance. Every I love you that's ever been said from a mountain or whispered in bed lives on forever, ringing in time. If you listen on a clear night, you'll hear yours and often stop to praise whatever it is that graces our hearts and our days, crossing our paths in a thousand ways with lessons and friends and sweet love that stays. From a mountain or whispered in bed lives on forever, ringing in time. If you listen on a clear night, you'll hear yours and
Johnson Evans on the Amy Beth Arkwright Show. Thanks again, Crow. Find out more about her work at crowspun.com. Folks chiming in on the Twitter feed already. Claire says, hey, you guys clicked really well. Great interview. Thank you, Claire. Jeremy and Speed giving us a thumbs up. And Shay said, another great one. I will indeed check it out. All right. Appreciate it. We're getting you some new fans. I like it. Hey, speaking of inspiration, our Inspiration to Action Challenge continues to show success. Shout out today going out to Danny up in Maine, who says, this is appropriate for our conversation today, working on a collection of short stories and mining some deep waters. You helped me get there by focusing and appreciating what's what. All right. I appreciate that comment, Danny. Thank you so much. If the Inspiration to Action Challenge has worked for you, give us a holler via the website amybetharkwe.com. I'll give you a shout-out because I think you deserve it, and it also helps spur other folks on in their creative journeys. And I'd also like to tell you I can help you out in that department if you need a little cajoling. We can start a creativity coaching and or counseling conversation. The first one is always on me. So chilly up in Maine, I suspect. Even Crow said it was chilly down in Arkansas. And around here in the New York area, we are in deep dish autumn the last couple of days, which I enjoy, although some folks in the higher elevations got some snow flurries overnight. A little early for that, but it happens. Kind of feels like Thanksgiving, though there's going to be a warming trend, they tell us, for Thanksgiving. So, you know, Mama Nature, she likes to play around with us. But speaking of Thanksgiving, don't forget our second annual Grateful Bounty is back by popular demand. We're going to serve up a great cornucopia of songs with your requests and dedications fixed in. If you get them into us by this coming Tuesday, November 18th, the show goes live next Friday at noon Eastern time and will be available thereafter for podcast. And you know that means you can listen to it anytime you want. So follow the show, the Amy Beth Arkwright Show, at the Blog Talk Radio site. You can download episodes there, also at iTunes, NetNow, or at the website, amybetharkwright.com. Please do get those song requests and dedications in. Well, certainly the requests. Dedications you can throw in later if you want, but we've got to have the song already loaded in. By Tuesday, November 18th, it's a firm date, so says Trudy, our producer, because we need time to get it all lined up in the system. Seems fair, right? I think so. And coming up on Tuesday, we will be talking with one of our fan faves. Patrick Moore is back. He is the founder of the popular All Things Crime blog. And he's got a new debut novel out. It's a thriller, I think, too. We're going to talk some of these hot topics in the news as we wait bracing for the decision from the grand jury down in Ferguson, whatever which way that may go in the next couple of days. If it comes through, that will certainly top the list. The Arias trial and other justice stories that I know you justice junkies can't get enough of. We will tackle it. So if you have any questions or cases you want us to tackle, let us know too via the website amybetharkwi.com or Twitter, of course. We're always available at AB Writes. So speaking of great music, and I think Crow mentioned one of her influences and people that she was aware of back when she was starting out was Joni Mitchell, who just celebrated her 71st birthday the other day. So let's dip in with our little birthday set. This one from her classic masterpiece, Blue. It's Carrie from Joni Mitchell on the Amy Beth Arkwright Show.
The wind is in from Africa. Last night I couldn't sleep. Oh, you know it sure is hard to leave here, Carrie, but it's really not my home. My fingernails are filthy. I've got bleach tar on my feet, and I miss my clean white linen and my fancy French cologne. Oh, Carrie, get out your cage. Let's have another round for the bright red devil who keeps me in this tourist town. Come on, Carrie, get out your cage. I
Mitchell from the great Court and Spark collection, Raised on Robbery, on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show, and of course Joni's Carrie from the Blue album, one of her masterpieces. Oh, she had so many. One of the real true pioneers in the singer-songwriter movement. Joni Mitchell, belated 71st birthday, as we celebrate creativity. And what a great conversation we have with Crow Johnson Evans. A lot of folks chiming in via Twitter. Johnny Fever's Hangover saying, "Hey, AB, great interview, one of your best. Fabulous tunes, too. Really love it." Well, thank you, Johnny Fever, one of our party irregulars. And Donna chiming in, "I'm checking out the website now. Love her sound." Well, there you go, Crow. We're getting you some more fans. I love it in real time, especially since we have a lot more listeners in podcasts. So it's great when folks are playing along live. I always love it, so feel free to do it if you are listening live at AB Writes or the website, the phone line, 347-857-4505. I told you it was a rule-free Friday, but that doesn't mean I have to not know what I'm talking about. Why should today be any different, right, as they say? So today was pretty inspired. The other day, yesterday in Washington, Nancy Pelosi was really getting in touch with her inner something. She is taking on reporters who once again questioned whether or not it was time for her to step aside as minority leader, since she hasn't been successful the last couple of terms in terms of getting the majority, and, of course, she's getting on in years. Well, she wasn't having any of it. She really blasted them and said, "When was the last time anybody questioned Mitch McConnell, who, by the way, I believe is older than Nancy Pelosi or around the same age, while he should step aside since he was unsuccessful three times as minority leader and now the new majority leader?" So she huffed off, and I don't blame her, I think. It's a little ageism and sexism mixed into one, and that is not a fun place to be, indeed. Celebrate people regardless of their age. Let her do her job. Why not? Meanwhile, Elizabeth Warren has been elevated to a role as, in the Senate, a liaison to different progressive causes and also a liaison to Wall Street, which some people say will hurt her if she should be running for president, which I don't think will happen in 2016, but you never know. Everybody thinks Hillary's going to run. She could pull a fast one. We'll have to see. Hey, it is the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show, and we're celebrating musical birthdays. There are quite a few luminaries who are getting up there, but you know what? Their music is still so great, the old stuff and a lot of times the new stuff too. One guy who has been kicking around for a long time and still sounds good. In fact, he's the youngest of the bunch of the sometime collective known as Crosby, Stills, Nash, and sometimes Young. Neil Young just celebrated his 69th birthday November 12th, and... been a long time since Sugar Mountain, but I love this song. Happy belated birthday, Neil Young.
Turn and see her smile. You can hear the words she wrote as you read a hidden note. Oh, to live on Sugar Mountain with the Barkers and the colored balloons. You can't be 20 on Sugar Mountain, though you're thinking that you're leaving there too soon. You're leaving there too soon. Now you're underneath the stairs and you're giving back some glares to the people who you met, and it's your first cigarette. Oh, to live on Sugar Mountain with the Barkers and the colored balloons. You can't be 20 on Sugar Mountain, though you're thinking that you're leaving there too soon. You're leaving there too soon. Now you say you're leaving home 'cause you want to be alone. Ain't it funny how you feel when you're finding out it's real? Oh, to live on Sugar Mountain with the Barkers and the colored balloons. You can't be 20 on Sugar Mountain, though you're thinking that you're leaving there too soon. Barkers and the colored balloons. You can't be 20 on Sugar Mountain, though you're thinking that you're leaving there too soon.
To the sun.
Jim. From Neil, now 69 years young. After the Gold Rush, and it's been many years since he was 20, leaving Sugar Mountain. Great stuff. And someone who really continues to create. Talk about longevity in the music business, reinventing the way he does it. Just did a big project a year or so ago with veterans on the internet. So fascinating stuff. And he's often been called the granddaddy of grunge. It's the flannel shirts, I guess, and the vibe, of course. Speaking of great vibes, oh, what fun we had with Crow Johnson Evans, and I think she enjoyed her stay, too. Sent me just a lovely Facebook message here. She said it was so much fun and thought-provoking. Thank you so much. And she also mentioned that she forgot to mention the Writer's Colony in Eureka Springs. It's fabulous. Hope you will all come to Northwest Arkansas one of these days. Yeah, I'd love to go down there. And so I looked it up on Facebook. See what all this connectiveness on social media, it works. It is a nonprofit, the Writer's Colony at Dairy Hollow down in Arkansas. It's a residency program for established and emerging writers, artists, and composers, and it's the only colony in the U.S. to offer a culinary fellowship, so you can eat well while you're writing, right? Great idea. We're going to look more into that, and I will post all these things for you on social media. Don't forget, you can follow Crow at on Facebook. She doesn't do too much on Twitter. She's on there, but she hasn't done too much, so you may not respond. And, of course, the website is crowspun.com. What a very talented, inspiring woman she is. And just keep going, doing your thing in your own time. Let it all unfold as it happens in the right rhythm, indeed. Speaking of unfolding, the new healthcare registration is open starting tomorrow all the way through February. So if you aren't registered for healthcare, this is the year you have to do it, I think, before facing a penalty, although there are some exemptions. And you may want to shop around even if you already have signed up, because there have been some changes. There may be some new plans in your area. So take a look if you dare, as we all remember what a daunting experiment it was last year. Hopefully they got the kinks out. But in case you're nostalgic for the old frustrations, here are the capital steps.
I was really excited to find out that I was going to be able to get health insurance because of Obamacare. Well, there's just one little problem. What's that error code? This site isn't fast. Should I scream and shout? Something really crashed. How did I get as dark as this? Oh, what's that hourglass? I don't know how to log in. Where to start? It keeps logging. This darn thing still buffering. I've grown sick of the site healthcare.gov. I don't think I can take this. Why, Barack, try to do it? He's a man with great big plans, but this it might be quicker to apply by fax. Should I call support? Is my info gone? Should I click refresh? Turn it off, then on? Why can't this site work?
Thank you for calling Obamacare. Your call is somewhat important to us. My name is Kevin. And you have reached our call center in Dallas. If you are having a heart attack, press 1. All other calls, stay on the line until your condition goes away on its own.
Well, now I'm cured, all right. I died last night.
Take your chances. Keep us posted. Hey, this is Andy, the Darkly Show. By the way, if you'd like to be involved in the show as a guest, we're always looking for compelling storytellers, from authors to filmmakers, musicians to social crusaders, theater folks, media mavens, justice experts, you name it. Hop over to the website, amybetharkowee.com. We'll see about getting you on the show that Media Bytes has dubbed a top professional podcast, calling it an empowering, entertaining tour de force. Certainly enjoyed our conversation today, didn't we? But we're almost done for the year. We may have one or two more slots before the year wraps up. Can't believe it already. Reaching towards the holidays. But wide open for 2015. So if you've got a book or a record or something coming out, record, do they still call records? Whatever you may have coming out, a project you'd like to promote, or stories you'd like to share with us, we'll see what we can do. And we'd love to converse with you, as we enjoy an eclectic array of guests. So many phenomenal folks have stopped by to talk with us and share their stories with us. I think it enlightens and enriches our lives, and we're always looking for great guests as we continue to grow with more and more listeners, guests, and sponsors. So thank you for being part of our little, what started out as an under the radar, over the radio rainbow experiment about a year and a half ago. So good stuff. I'm having a blast doing it, for sure. The mouth doesn't always cooperate. It kind of has a deal. We do this twice a week generally, and it's good for the mouth to be working from noon to two, but occasionally it goes off on its own, and the mind is just sort of going faster or something. I don't know. But we're working on it. We're in sync today. It's been a crazy week. And not a great week for the cake boss. Yeah, this guy, Buddy Valastro, actually he's a fun character, the popular TV show Cake Boss, got arrested for DUI the other day. And according to cops, he said to them, "You can't arrest me. I'm the cake boss." Ooh, I don't know. How much would you be willing to pay to watch that happen in person? The variations of "Don't you know who I am" are always entertaining, but I don't think they usually work. Remember Reese Witherspoon, when she had a little problem, her husband got arrested, and she protested, and then she, too, found herself in hot water. So, the cake boss, you'll have to be thawing out for a while, I guess. Details to follow. And another story with these kids suing their parents for college education. For their college education, a Temple University student won her lawsuit against her estranged parents to make them pay for her tuition, even though she's an adult now and they haven't spoken to her in over 2 years. Now, here's the deal. Her parents broke up when she was about two. She lived with her mom, but as a teen, she rebelled and moved out to her grandparents' house. And that's where the things get kind of murky. She says she was thrown out of her mom's house. They say she left on her own. And it gets weirder. The grandparents are the ones who paid for the attorney to sue their own son. I guess it's because they don't want to be paying for the tuition. Now, if you're thinking, well, why should anyone have to pay? She's an adult. It's not a responsibility. There is a precedent set in New Jersey, a case that said that divorced parents can be forced to contribute to their kids' college education. So that's where that comes from, according to details from the Philadelphia TV station WPVI. There will be an appeal. So we'll keep you posted. There was that New Jersey girl, I think she met up with her parents, though, who was suing her parents as well. So it's kind of interesting stuff. Here we go. We're having a little technical difficulties. Please stand by, as they say. All of a sudden, the screen went out. We didn't have our monitor here. But, okay, we're back. Anyway, interesting stuff indeed. Those gremlins, Trudy, I know she's tearing her hair out every time we have a glitch. It happens. What can you do? It just does happen. All right, let's get, while we still can, if we still can, where were we here? Okay. If I can find it, we can do it. Here we go. Yeah. I wanted to celebrate another musical birthday, believe it or not, this week. Bonnie Raitt. Oh, yeah, the fiery redhead, celebrating her 65th birthday, but don't count on Bonnie to be collecting Social Security or Medicare anytime soon. She is still going strong, and they're giving us all something to talk about with her great guitar and her great vocals. Happy birthday, Bonnie Raitt, on the Amy Beth Arcoe Show.
Mm-hmm. one radio station listeners choose because they know it's so. They'll find their listening pleasure on.
From Birthday Girl, Bonnie Raitt, Runaway, and Something to Talk About on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Boy, we had so much to talk about with Pro Johnson Evans. What a great time that was. And with you, thanks so much for joining us. Don't forget, you can follow the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show at the Blog Talk Radio site. If you missed an episode, download it there. Enjoy it anytime you want. And you can also friend me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter at AB Writes, or, of course, the website, amybetharkowitz.com. Thanks again, Trudy, Aurora, ML at TCS headquarters, for keeping the show moving. And for you, all who participated live, always love it. A great time. Hope you have yourself a great weekend, whatever you do, wherever you go. Drive safe, play nice, dream big. Bundle up out there in many parts of the country, and don't forget to come back and see us on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. We're going to leave you with another one from Crow Johnson Evans. This one's called Gypsy Heart. Have a great weekend. Take care.
Gypsy heart on the road slowly coming my way. Lights are dancing in your eyes, sweet, the song you play. I will close my eyes and pray you pass me by. Many years ago, I braided ribbons in my hair and followed. I followed. Heart, as you approach, I see your hair is turning gray. You could sit with me a while. It's cool here in the shade. I will. All over that raggedy cart and race along the beach with pounding hearts. And didn't we roll in the warm surf at dark? Was it Tangiers or Mustang Island or the Malabar Coast? You said you loved me most. Gypsy heart, I reach out for you and slowly realize everyone I've ever loved smiles back at me through your eyes. All over that ragged cart and race along the beach with pounding heart. Didn't we lie in the warm surf at dark? Was it chance?